Then he released Barabbas and scourged Jesus, and he delivered him to be crucified. Then the soldiers of the governor took Jesus into the praetorium and gathered the whole garrison around him and stripped him, put a scarlet robe on him, and when they had twisted a crown of thorns, they put it on his head and a reed in his right hand, and they bowed the knee before him and mocked him, saying, "Hail, King of the Jews." And then they spat on him. They took a reed and struck him on the head. And when they had mocked him, they took the robe off him and put his own clothes on him and led him away to be crucified. And as they came out, they found a man of Cyrene, Simon by name. Him they compelled to bear his cross. And when they had come to a place called Golgotha, that is to say the place of a skull, they gave him sour wine mingled with gall to drink, but when he had tasted it, he would not drink. And then they crucified him and divided his garments, casting lots that they might be fulfilled, which was spoken by the prophet, that they divided my garments among them, and for my clothing they cast lots. And sitting down, they kept watch over him there. And they put over his head the accusation written against him, "This is Jesus, the King of the Jews." There two robbers were crucified with him, one on the right, one on the left. And those who passed by blasphemed, wagging their heads and saying, "You who destroy the temple and build it in 3 days, save yourself. If you're the Son of God, come down from the cross." And likewise, the chief priest also, mocking, and the scribes and the elders said, "He saved others. Himself he cannot save. If he's the King of Israel, let him now come down from the cross and we'll believe in him. He trusted in God, but let him deliver him now if he will save him. But for he said, 'I am the Son of God.'" And even the robbers who were crucified with him reviled him with the same thing. Now from the sixth hour until the ninth hour, there was darkness over all the land. And about the ninth hour, Jesus cried out with a loud voice, saying, "Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani?" That is, my God, why have you forsaken me?" Some of those who stood there, when they heard that, said, "This man is calling for Elijah." And immediately one of them ran and took a sponge and filled it with sour wine and put it on a reed and offered it to him to drink. And the rest said, "Let him alone. Let's see if Elijah will come to save him." And Jesus cried out again with a loud voice, and he yielded up his spirit. The Roman government executed Jesus at the behest of the Jewish leadership, who urged the people to demand the death of this man from Nazareth, to kill him as a common criminal, to treat him as if he was a common criminal. The hill Golgotha was the place for execution. Crucifixion was very common in these days. This was not an unusual occurrence. The people of Palestine, the Roman Empire, in fact, was very familiar with crucifixion. It was something that was done almost in excess, as they crucified many, many people. And the thing about the crucifixion that is a little bit against the grain of what we're familiar with is that it was a public event. It was not something that was done in the security of a building or in some enclosed place that nobody was going to find, but it was in an open area. That Golgotha was a place of common killings. This was a place that they would take them, and there were many crosses there. The ground was probably many times stained with the bloods of its other victims. Jesus was not the very first person to be crucified, but this was a great event. Matthew 27 tells us that there were those who passed by. Imagine being crucified and having all of these people just milling around you there. And there were, of course, the chief priests and the scribes and the elders and the religious leaders who had convinced through the chaos of the crowds to have Pilate execute Jesus. Luke 23 tells us that there was a great multitude of people that followed Jesus as they took him out of the praetorium, and that the people stood there looking. One of the things that is true about the crucifixion is that the humiliation was almost without measure, because you're hanging there in between heaven and earth and all the people are watching and gawking after you. And even in Luke 23 and verse 48, talking about the whole crowd who came together. Of course, we know from John's account, there were specifically some people there. There was the mother of Jesus, Mary, was there watching her son die on the cross. If anybody that knew without any doubt, without any circumstance of reservation, it was Mary, because she knew that he was the Son of God. Mary's sister was there. Mary, the wife of Clopas, and also Mary Magdalene. We know that John was there. And so there were some of his disciples that were there. And then think about the crucifixion, that when Jesus was being crucified, this was not news to him. This was not like, wow, I didn't know this was going to happen. This was not like a measure that, well, this didn't work out and that this was sort of a very terrible thing in his day. Jesus knew exactly what was going to happen to him because crucifixion was something that was common, and he knew what went along with crucifixion. And we know that when Jesus was talking about his death, that he knew what they were going to do to him. He knew that they were going to scourge him. He knew that they were going to deliver him to be crucified. And the fact that that's what Jesus understood, that the language that the gospel writers give us is, it seems to be that they know everything about this. We just read, you know, Matthew's account of what happened to Jesus. And, you know, the language of the gospel writers assumes the readers know exactly what's being said. When you say that when he had scourged him, you're thinking, okay, what does that mean? To these people, they knew what that meant because they had seen the effects of this. They knew what this was. And that's all that the gospel writers will say. And so to appreciate that, we may read that and think, well, they just beat him. No, they didn't just beat him. We'll talk about scourging of what it means. But this is the way, and even when the gospel writers talk about the fact that they went and they crucified Jesus, for you and I, it doesn't seem to fit because we're not occasioned to that. I mean, I think that the last public execution in the United States was in 1932 or 36 or something like that, and they decided they didn't want to do, when everybody, when anybody is executed today, it's done behind closed door. Nobody gets in there except specific people. And so we're not as familiar with it. The gospel writers were actually writing about something that everybody knew about. They knew the impact of scourging. They had probably witnessed either crucifixion itself or people that had been crucified. There were times in the Roman Empire that they would crucify people like telephone poles. And that's not an exaggeration. Hundreds and thousands of people, they just nail them up to a tree somewhere. And so crucifixion, so often we kind of miss in many ways the impact. Now, it's not that we're trying to make something more than what it is, because it is what it is. But I think we also have to remind ourselves about what this really means when we're about to take of the Lord's Supper, because what Jesus said on the night that he was betrayed, when they were eating and he took the bread and he blessed it, he said, "Take, eat, this is my body." He knew within a few hours his body was going to be scourged. His body was going to be abused. They were going to spit on him. They were going to strike him. They were going to do terrible things to him. And then they were going to go crucify him. He didn't know what that felt like because he had never been crucified, but he knew what it meant. And so when we talk about the Lord's Supper and the fact that Jesus is saying, "Take, eat, this is my body," this is hours, moments before Judas comes and betrays him. And then he goes on to say that when he takes the cup and gives thanks and says to them, "Drink from it, all of you, for this is my blood." He knew what was about to happen. He knew that blood was going to be a big part of what was about to come upon him. Jesus knew that because this was not a surprise to Jesus. Jesus knew in Matthew 16 and verse 21 exactly what they were going to do. He knew that he was going to go to Jerusalem, suffer many things of the elders and the chief priests and the scribes, and he was going to be killed and raised again. He knew that. This was not a mistake. This was not just an unfortunate circumstance. This is what he knew was going to happen. Jesus knew what was coming. In various passages, and these are in your notes, we're going to leave this for you to spend, but this is what he said was going to happen to him. In Matthew, Mark, and Luke's account, they were going to mock him, and they did. They treated him as the soldiers were having their fun with this weakened man in whom it said he was the king. And so they mocked him, and they spit on him. And this is a garrison of soldiers, hundreds of soldiers, the well-elite-trained army of Caesar, making fun of this joke in front of them, making fun of this criminal in front of them, making fun of this wretched man that they have the power to abuse. And they shamefully treat him in every way that is demeaning and that is horrible. And then they get to scourge him. And they get to let their licks come into him and watch him bleed and watch him suffer. But then they get to go kill him. And they're proficient at this. One of the things that the Romans were proficient at what they did. And when they came to crucifixion, they were extremely proficient at what they did. And Jesus tells us that they were going to kill him. And he knew that. And before Judas even came to betray him with a kiss, Jesus, I believe, is thinking about these things and knows what is about to happen to him. And it's concerning. He's the Son of God. And he's deity, and I don't understand how being 100% deity and 100% humanity meshes together, but he was. And he's there in the garden, and he's been praying. And Luke, the physician, tells us that he, being in agony, prayed more earnestly, and his sweat was, this, as it were, great drops of blood falling down on the ground. I mean, he is going through at a physical reaction that is intense beyond measure. And they haven't even arrested him yet. Jesus knows what is going to happen. Judas comes, they arrest him, they put him in chains, and they drag him off to the Jewish courts first, and then the Roman courts. He'll go to Pilate, Pilate will send him to Herod, Herod sends him back, and then finally Pilate, who knows that he's not done anything wrong, agrees and washes his hands symbolically of the blood of Jesus, and then sends Jesus off to be scourged because there's nothing else to do for Pilate. And so it just simply says that Pilate took Jesus and they scourged him. Scourging or flogging was the legal preliminary to every Roman execution. The only people they did not do this to were women and Roman senators, anyway, or soldiers, with the exception that if a soldier went AWOL, if they deserted, they could be scourged. But they didn't scourge women, they didn't scourge politicians, and they didn't scourge soldiers. The usual instrument of the scourging was a short whip with several single or braided leather thongs of different lengths. And they would put iron balls or sharp pieces of sheep's bone inside, tied at intervals of this. The man was stripped of his clothing for scourging, and his hands were tied to an upright post. The back and the buttocks and the legs were flogged either by two soldiers or by one who alternated positions. The severity of the scourging really depended upon the disposition of the lictor, how he was feeling that day, what he was thinking about, and maybe how his day had been going. And they intended to weaken the victim to a state just short of collapse or death. They could not kill him. As a matter of fact, if the Roman soldier killed this man, they would be killing him. But he would do it, and they were proficient enough that they knew when to stop. And as the Roman soldiers repeatedly struck their victims back with full force, the iron balls would cause deep contusions, and the leather thongs and the sheep bones would cut into the skin and tissues. And as the flogging continued, the lacerations would tear into the underlying skeletal muscles and produce quivering ribbons of bleeding flesh. Pain and blood loss generally set the stage for a circulatory shock. The extent of blood loss may well have determined how long he was going to actually make it on the cross, whether it was going to be a short time or a long time. It was at the Praetorium that Jesus was severely whipped. Although in the gospel writings, nothing is said of the severity, it just simply says that he was scourged. There is a sense that is drawn out of 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 24 that the scourging of Jesus was especially intense. You can imagine why that would be, with these Roman soldiers having this man before him who claimed to be a king. And they took it out on him. And they beat him quite severely. In the Jewish law, you could only use 39 stripes because it was 40, and they wanted to make sure that they did not go over that. But it is doubtful that as a Roman that they would have cared much about the numbers. It is after this that they mocked him. They have already scourged him. They put a purple robe on him. They twisted a crown of thorns. They put it on his head. They put a wooden staff and a scepter in his hand. And then they began to spit in his face. And they began to take the staff and hit him in the head with it, which would be driving the thorns, no doubt, into his head. And when they were finished, they took that purple robe off, which would no doubt probably reopen the scourging wounds. The severe scourging with its intense pain and appreciable blood loss most probably left Jesus in a pre-shock state. The event in the garden where the blood came out of his sweat that we read just a moment ago rendered his skin particularly tender. You think about the physical and the mental abuse meted out by the Jews and the Romans. Jesus did not eat, he had not drunk, and he had not slept for many hours. Before the actual crucifixion, Jesus' physical condition was at least serious, if not possibly critical. But then they go to crucify him. And so John tells us that bearing his cross, he went forth to a place. But the customary way this was done was that the condemned man was required to carry his own cross. It is very doubtful that he carried the whole thing. A cross of that magnitude probably weighed 300 pounds. Nobody in any shape would all be able to do that. It is most likely that what they did is that they had these stipes already in the ground at Golgotha, hundreds of them. And that what they did is that they used a cross piece, which is called a patibulum, which weighed still 75 to 125 pounds. And that's what they would place across the nape of the person's neck, and they would tie it onto his arms. And he would bear this to Golgotha. And they would tie the arms to the outstretched piece of wood so that he would not drop it. And then they would take this procession down to the place of Golgotha with a complete Roman military guard. And one of the soldiers would carry the sign that had the accusation of the man that they were crucifying, which would later be attached to the cross. And the Roman soldiers will not leave this person. Once they are in his custody, they will never leave this person until he is dead. And then when they got out of the city, they would then permanently attach him to one of those heavy, upright wooden stipes. And that's what John tells us, is that when they crucified him, they put one robber on one side and the one on the other side, Jesus, of course, there in the middle. And they would lay him down on the ground, and they would stretch his arms out, and they would nail his arms to this patibulum. And then they would pick up that patibulum with probably a low cross. If it was a high cross, they would use some kind of like fork or things, but probably a low cross, which was not very high. And they would lift it up onto the top of the stipe and just sort of set it in place. And of course, Jesus is basically dangling there only by his wrist. And then to make things a little bit more comfortable, they would just, if it could be, they would have this little piece of wood, a wooden block or plank that was about halfway down, sort of as a crude seat. And then they would take and nail his feet. But in the meantime, when they first came there, they would give them this anesthesia, this drink that mixed with myrrh and gall, and it had a sedative in it to take away the pain. And they did that with everybody. And then they would, again, lay him down, and they would take his arms and stretch them out upon this patibulum, and they would nail him to the cross. Then they would take the feet, and as they lifted him up on the cross and nail him, the nails that they have found in crucifixions, they actually have found bodies that still the bones have the nails in the wrist. They're about 5 to 7 inches long and about 3/8 inch across, very crude nails, but they were driven usually through the wrist so that it would not tear. And although the feet could be fixed to the side of the stipes, they usually were nailed directly in front
they would just drive them straight into the front of the stipe. To do this, they had to flex the knees a little bit just to allow him to be able to breathe. And then they would, having finished nailing his feet, they would take the Titulus and they would put it above his head. Death on the cross was different. The length of survival generally ranged from 3/4 of an hour to 3/4 of a day. Some have lasted longer. Again, it may have a lot to do with the scourging. But when Jesus had received the vinegar, which was not the medicinal kind, he just said, "It is finished," and God died. It's amazing how that statement is made, that he just gave up to die. If the scourging had been mild, the person could last a little longer, but if it was very severe, it would be intense. If the person was still living when they came up there, they could break the knees, or break the legs below the knees, and it would hasten death. Since no one was intended to survive crucifixion, the body was not released to the family until the Roman soldiers made sure that the person was dead. And so they would take a spear, most likely, and they would stick it right up the right side of his chest into his heart and make sure that they were dead. And these are very proficient people. They knew how to use a spear and to kill a person. They were very familiar with it. The spear would have gone up into the heart, and blood and water in Jesus' case came out, and he was already dead. With the knowledge of both anatomy and ancient crucifixion practices, we can reconstruct the probable medical aspects of this form of slow execution. Crucifixion was designed to produce intense pain and agony and to prolong it as long as they could. It probably could be said that it is the worst means of execution that man has ever devised. The scourging would weaken the man, and when the victim was thrown to the ground on his back in preparation for the transfixiation, the scourging would most likely have been torn open and the wounds filled with dirt. There was appreciable blood loss. The wrists were nailed to the patibulum with the arms outstretched, but not taut. And again, putting probably right here in the area of the wrist. And they were very careful not to break any of the bones, because they wanted to basically hit that nerve in the wrist, because that increased more pain, particularly when you're trying to breathe, because in order to breathe, you're going to have to pull yourselves up on your wrist and push up on your feet, and they wanted that to be as painful as it could. And so the stimulated nerve would produce excruciating bolts of fiery pain every time you took a breath. Just to get a breath was an extremely painful means of living. And most commonly, the feet were fixed to the front of the stipes by means of an iron spike, and the person was left to die. Really, the way that the person died was just marked interference with breathing. The breathing is what became particularly difficult, particularly the exhalation. The weight of the body pulling down on the outstretched arms and shoulders would tend to fix the intercostal muscles in an inhalation state, thereby hindering passive exhalation. Breathing was very shallow, and so in time, the body would weaken and they would die. Jesus was crucified about 9:00 in the morning. The Roman soldiers put Jesus' clothes back on him, and when they led him out to be crucified, he was only having to go 1/3 of a mile, but he was so weakened he couldn't make it. And they compelled Simon of Cyrene to carry the patibulum to the crucifixion. When they got to the place of crucifixion, they took all of his clothes off except for a loincloth, and they divided that up as was fulfillment in the prophecy. He was offered the drink of wine that had myrrh and gall in it, but he refused it. And I don't want you to miss that point, because Jesus wanted to feel every bit of the crucifixion, No medicine, no nothing. He wanted to feel it all because it had to do with feeling all of sin. Jesus and the thieves were crucified. They taunted Jesus. They laughed at him. They mocked him. It is truly amazing that Jesus spoke seven times. The very ability of saying anything on the cross was an amazing thing. At around 3 o'clock on Friday, Jesus cried out with a loud voice, and he bowed his head, and he died. And since the Jews did not want the bodies to remain on the cross after sunset, the beginning of the Sabbath, they asked Pilate to go and to break the legs. They came to the first robber and found that he was alive, and so they broke his legs. They came to the second robber and found that he was alive, and they broke his legs. They came to Jesus, and he was already dead. But it is then that one of the soldiers pierced his side, probably with an infantry spear, and produced a sudden flow of water and blood. Later that day, Jesus' body was taken down and put in a tomb. For I received from the Lord that which I also delivered to you, that the Lord Jesus, on the same night in which he was betrayed, took bread. And when he had given thanks, and he broke it and said, "Take, eat, this is my body, which is broken for you. Do this in remembrance of me." In the same manner, he also took the cup after supper, saying, "This cup is the new covenant in my blood. This do, for as often as you drink it, in remembrance of me. For as often as you eat this bread and drink this cup, you proclaim the Lord's death until he comes."